Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, do you ever find yourself in a little power struggle, maybe between your spouse and yourself, or maybe even between your kids and yourself, or find that unhappiness kind of takes center stage when things don't match your version of perfect? Well, sometimes our perspective of how life should go replaces God's perspective of how life should go, and we don't even realize that what we might be doing is grasping for control. Well, today I'm talking with Shannon Popkin, who recently released the book Control Girl, Lessons on Surrendering Your Burden of Control from Seven Women of the Bible. Let me tell you a little bit about her and we'll get her on the show. Best-selling author and speaker Shannon Popkin loves to blend her gifts for storytelling and humor with her passion for God's Word. Shannon is the author of Control Girl, Lessons on Surrendering Your Burden of Control from Seven Women in the Bible. Shannon is happy to be sharing life with Ken, her husband, who makes her laugh every single day, she says, and together they live in the fast-paced life of parenting three teens. For more on Shannon, you can go to controlgirl.com. Welcome, Shannon.
Hi, Joe. Thanks so much.
Well, I had a little stack of books on my desk, and when I saw one that was titled Control Girl, I grabbed it right away. I'm not sure what that says about me.
Well, I don't know what it says about me that I wrote the book.
I think it says we'd be fast friends as we would talk about things that we have in common. But it does seem like, for women at least, the concept of being a control girl might come naturally for a lot of us. Have you found that that's true?
Yes, I do find a lot of women who are relating to the subject, although we don't always realize that control is at the bottom of what we're trying to do. We think we're just trying to make everything turn out right.
Well, and even you admitted in the beginning of your book that your initial inspiration came from you realizing that maybe you had some control issues that you hadn't unearthed yet.
Right, yeah. I always thought that anger was my problem. And clearly anger was a problem. I was losing my temper and saying things I didn't mean and asking friends to pray for me and reading books about anger. But I realized that under that anger that was rising to the surface was this desire for control. And I was getting mad because things weren't in my control. And I do think that sometimes these negative emotions that rise to the surface, like anger or fear or fretting or perfectionism, those sorts of things often are tied to an underlying struggle that we have with wanting to control everything.
And so as you began to kind of dig into this, you're a Bible teacher, so obviously it sounds like you went right to Scripture. What were you finding about this issue of trying to control things?
Well, I think that God wants us to recognize that He's in control. He wants us to surrender to Him. He wants us to give up control and let Him work things out and be the one who's mastering our relationships and other people rather than us taking control into our own hands. And so, yeah, everywhere we look in Scripture, God is basically saying, hey, let me be in control. I'm God. You're not.
Well, there does seem like there's a difference between when we pray, God, have your way with me, and God, I'm going to do these things. Please bless them. What's the difference there, and how can we relate better to what God has in store for us?
Oh, that's such a great way to put it. Demanding that God do things my way is not really letting Him be God, right? And Jesus came to lead us out of sin, to lead us out of, you know, the way that we struggle with our own sin natures. And Jesus says, come follow me. And we see Jesus, even who was God, we see Jesus surrendering, you know, even in the garden, as he was facing the cross, he's bent over in agony, facing what he doesn't want and saying, not my will, but yours be done. And so not telling God how it has to be, but surrendering. I mean, even God's Son surrendered. And so, oh my goodness, what a position that puts us in. We need to surrender like Jesus too, right? And let him be in control.
Well, it's true. Sometimes I think we want to think that surrender is going to be easy. Oh, it's so simple. You just give your thoughts, your mind, your life to God. And we think that's supposed to be easy. But if even Jesus struggled with this, it is normal for us to struggle with this too, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I think sometimes I have this picture of surrender, like, you know, I think of it as serenity, you know, serene, surrender. They both have the same root, maybe. And I picture myself having my hands lifted, you know, in a worship song. But oh my goodness, so many times surrender is like this gritty battle where, like Jesus, I'm down on my knees, I'm sweating, I'm stressed out, and I'm frustrated, and I don't want to surrender. But yet, surrender is what leads to peace and to security and to hope. It's letting God be in control rather than me taking control. And so God isn't being mean when he asks me to surrender. He's inviting me to the very things that I'm looking for when I try to take control.
It's true, isn't it? We do struggle for this elusive control, and yet even when we get it or we fight for it, it doesn't seem to bring us the peace that we think it will.
No, especially not in relationships. You know, relationships, we're always like trying to control other people and get other people to do things the way that we think is best, you know, in our marriages or our parenting or even our friendships or work relationships. We're vying after control because we're trying to bring peace. You know, we're trying to make everything settle. And yet when we try to control, we just introduce tension and chaos and frustration and anger. It doesn't bring about the very things that we're trying to accomplish when we take control.
Well, and it's true. Sometimes it brings some unintended consequences when we struggle for and actually get what we think it's control. It affects other people as well. In fact, you look at 7 different women in the Bible who struggle to gain that control and how it affects not only them, but the people around them as well. Can we start with just talking about Eve, and what did you study about her, and why would you consider her to be a control girl?
Yeah, I think with the story of Eve, it's so interesting that God put this tree right in the middle of the garden that they were instructed not to eat from. And I think that's interesting because when I don't want my children to have something, I don't put it in the middle of the table or the middle of the room. I usually tuck it away where they can't get to it. But so God put this tree right in the middle. And, you know, maybe it was right where all of the garden paths converged. And you wonder, why would God do that? Why didn't he put the fruit 10 feet up covered in prickers? Why did he let it hang there, dangling in front of them? And I think that that tree was posing a question. I think that as they passed by the tree, God wanted them to be asking themselves, okay, am I going to surrender to God? This one limitation is I enjoy it the rest of the garden. Am I going to live in sweet surrender to God, or am I going to try and take control? Am I going to rebel against God's authority in my life? And, you know, of course, we know the end of the story. Eve did take that fruit, and she took control for herself. She said, you know what, I think I can handle this. I can be the decision maker. And as a result, God said, okay, I'm going to let you be controlling. I'm going to let you live out this rebellion in the way that you live from now on. In fact, when God spoke the curse over Eve, he said, your desire will now be for your husband. Or the New Living Translation translates it, you will desire to control your husband. And so it's like God is saying, you want to take control? I'm going to let you be controlling. And so for me, understanding that those words and the curse, that was like being diagnosed with this degenerative disease, you know, that had been passed on way back from Eve. Like suddenly all of my symptoms made sense. No wonder I'm trying to control everything, because it's all rooted back in Eve's story, in her rebelling against God and taking control for herself.
You know, that hardly seems fair that we get to live in her shadow for the rest of our lives. But it is true. Sometimes we do act in a way that would be representative of what she did way back then.
Yeah, I think every time that we are manipulative, controlling, emasculating wives, we're living out that curse. And then, you know, we let this controlling nature seep into other relationships too. And when we act in this manipulative, controlling way, we're just living out our nature, our sin nature that we have inherited from Eve. It's not who we want to be, and yet it is who we are.
You know, and sometimes as parents, especially parents of young children, we do need to take on a little bit of control, don't we, so that our children actually live to be teenagers.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I like to talk about the hold and fold principle. So when we first get those little babies from the hospital, we're holding them. We're holding responsibility for them. And then by the time they're 18, they're adults on their own, we're mostly folding our hands in surrender to God, saying, you know what, they're yours now. they're an adult. They're on their own. And so that process between when they're born and when they're an adult, we go from completely holding to completely folding. And it's a process little by little of giving up control, of moving from holding responsibility for our kids to folding and giving God back that authority in their life.
Isn't that interesting? Because I was just talking with a friend about how when my child was a baby, I used to just lay down on the floor next to his crib and just pray for safety. I had an incredible fear that something was going to happen to him physically that would cause him harm. And I would just pray for physical safety so much, and other things too. But that was really a draw for me. And now that he's a teenager, I will sneak in and kneel next to his bed, and I just pray for wisdom and discernment and that he won't hurt himself and others somehow. It's like the prayer is different, of course, but my intention is to just make sure that he is okay. And it is more of a letting go instead of a trying to protect him, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, in both instances, you're praying that God would protect him, that God would keep him safe, because even when we are completely responsible for this little baby, ultimately we're not in control of what happens to them. So whether they're newborns or fully grown adults, we're continually called to surrender our kids and lay them back on the altar. We love them so much, and we would like to take control. But if we continue as parents to be controlling beyond the point where it's needed, we introduce more tension into the relationship. So your son is, did you say, a teenager now?
Yes.
Yeah, and so like if you're still picking out his clothes or telling him what he can and can't eat, you know, that would probably create tension. And so as a mom, your job is little by little by little to give up control. That's really hard though in those middle ages of like 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, because we're still very responsible, and yet our kids are becoming more independent. And so here's what I like to say to young moms. If your child can still crawl into your lap, or still does crawl into your lap, if you can still hold your child on your lap, then you're going to be still doing a lot of holding. But if they're too big to fit in your lap, then you're going to mostly be folding your hands and surrender to God.
Mm. Yes, I think that I could fit in my son's lap right now. So I'm not a big person, but it's no one told me that feeling of helplessness that would occur when the teenager becomes the teenager, where it is just a very different emotion and feeling, and a different crying out to God, because you want so much for your young man or your young woman to grow up to be a responsible, wise, knowledgeable young woman who is just faithful to God. And so those prayers are just so, so very different, because you feel that time kind of ticking away, and I'm already counting the summers that I have left. And it's a very strange feeling of helplessness that I didn't really count on back when they are in their crib and you're thinking about the days instead of the years.
Oh, yeah, I have a teenage son too, and I would say too, the temptation to try and control him is just it's so great because I see, it almost feels like on his own, everything is careening out of control, like, oh no, I have to stop it. I project forward and I think, okay, where is this all going to lead? So like for instance, he was just eating breakfast the other day and he didn't finish his oatmeal. And so I was like, "You have to eat. You have to finish eating." And he's like, "Mom, I'm not hungry." And I'm like, "Yeah, but if you don't eat, then you're not going to do well on your test today. And like if you don't do well on your test today, then your grade point might be affected. And if your grade point's affected, then your college and then oh my goodness, I can project out like 15 years into the future based on this one bowl of oatmeal." It's ridiculous. And so the temptation to try to control based on where I feel this is all leading, it's so great. But I think that God just keeps calling me back to, trust me, surrender, fold your hands and surrender to me. I've got this. I am truly in control.
Well, I affirm your wisdom there. Well, I'm talking to Shannon Popkin today. She has written an insightful new book called Control Girl, Lessons on Surrendering Your Burden of Control from 7 Women in the Bible. We'll talk about more of those women from the Bible who might have had some control issues as well when we come back with Shannon Popkin. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. Today, I'm talking to Shannon Popkin about her book, Control Girl. Maybe you've felt a little controlling at different times in your life. Many women today worry about life kind of spinning out of control. And when they realize they're not in control, they may react with anger or fear or numerous other emotions as well. Well, Shannon Popkin explains what it means to surrender control issues to God. Shannon, you've written about 7 different women in the Bible who might have had some control issues and what we can learn from them when we feel like we're spinning out of control. Talk about Rachel a little bit. She's one of my favorite characters from the Bible. I think we have so much to learn from her. How did she have a control issue?
You know, Rachel's story is so interesting because she seemed to have this charmed life. She has this adoring man who worked 14 years just to have her, and she's beautiful. She's the favored sister. And yet when you kind of look under the covers in Rachel's story, it's not really pretty. Rachel just spends her whole life obsessed with her one goal of having babies. It's like she's pacing back and forth in front of this empty crib, worrying about, just her life not being important enough or not having as much as her sister. She's constantly comparing herself. And so she turns to Jacob, and we almost feel like she's got her hands around his neck saying, "Give me babies or I'm going to die." And she's very controlling. And she turns to Jacob instead of God. She doesn't turn to God with this desire for children. She turns to Jacob, and it says she steals her father's idols, and she tries to go after these mandrakes. So she's using substitutes for God to try to get what she wants. And then, interestingly, Rachel's life is kind of cut short. She dies after her in childbirth with her second baby. And, when we look at Rachel's life, she was the mother of Joseph. She played a very important role in the history of God's people. She was one of the mothers of the nation of Israel. And we think, oh my goodness, what a role of incredible significance. She had a beautiful life in God's story, and yet she didn't see it that way. She was just burdened with wanting to control things and make it all turn out right. She didn't see that God did have things under control, that it was falling into place according to God's perspective. And that's a fear that I have for myself, too. I think I can get so obsessed with my plans and my ideals for how my little life is supposed to go, and I can lose God's perspective. When I try to hijack my story and make it all about me, I'm kind of losing track that this is God's story and that he has greater purposes and that my story is tucked into a bigger story that's all about him. I think Rachel's story in the Bible gives us new perspective on us trying to control things and make it all fall into place according to our little plans.
Isn't that interesting? Because when we look at Leah's life, she almost took on a better thought process, as a matter of fact. Of course, we don't know this, but it sounds like she was more of a surrenderer, that she kind of stayed the course and just kept moving forward. And then Rachel came along with all of these opportunities, and according to who she was and the place she had been given, and yet she made very vastly different choices on not staying the course and crafting her own plan. And it really does show how you can mess things up on your own when you do that, doesn't it?
Yes. Oh, we can just terribly mess things up. If we would just sit back and trust that God is in control, we just take that burden of control off of our shoulders. We keep heaping it back onto our shoulders, and God's saying, no, I want you to live. I'm in control. You're not. And he invites us to live accordingly. If only Rachel could have lived accordingly.
Well, today I'm talking to Shannon Popkin. She's just written this really insightful new book called Control Girl, Lessons on Surrendering Your Burden of Control from 7 Women in the Bible. And Shannon and her publisher have graciously given us a few books to give away. If you'd like to get one into your hands or the hands of someone who you know could use it, you can just go to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to submit your name and your contact information that way. And we will do a drawing at the end of the show. Again, I'm talking to Shannon Popkin, and we will be right back on Connecting Faith.
Truth is, you know what tomorrow brings. There's not a day ahead you have not seen. So in all things, be my life and breath. I want what you want, Lord, and nothing less. When you
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. Today I'm talking with author Shannon Popkin, and she shares what she's discovered about her own control struggles. Maybe you have some of your own. She's discovered how God has worked with different women in the Bible and their control issues as well. So whether it was Eve's desire to know instead of trust, or whether it was Rachel's desire to control her own destiny, we will learn from those women in the Bible. Shannon, one of my favorite characters in the Bible as well is Sarah, because if you're talking about someone who's trying to control the way things are supposed to go, she seems like a real champion of that, doesn't she?
Yes. Oh, I have so much compassion for Sarah because she was just trying to do what God had said she would do.
Right. She just didn't understand the path she had to take.
No, I mean, who would have thought she had to wait until she was 90 to finally have this baby, right? Didn't seem like part of the natural plan.
No, it hardly seems fair, and I might be questioning as well if I were 90 and still wondering when that baby was going to come.
Oh, yeah. And yet, God did. He brought a baby out of a dry, barren womb at 90 years old. And God does keep his promises, even when we feel like there's no way we can know that God has plans and ideas and power that we could never even dream of to accomplish his purposes.
You know, you write that control issues are actually sometimes a little more pronounced in families. Sarah or Rachel, of course, would be great examples of this. Have you found this to be true, and why is that true?
Well, I think in family relationships, we have so much hope for how we want the future to go. It's like we have this happy ending all worked out in our heads. And we're just trying to control because we care so much. We're very invested. And so we try to take control of these people that we love or control the circumstances that we're living in because we have such great hopes for the future. I think I see that in Sarah's story, and I see that in Rebecca's story. They're just trying to get everything to turn out according to their little happy ending that they've already got written. But God had other plans, and I think that we need to hold our plans loosely. God, by surrendering to God, we guard ourselves against living lives of like white-knuckled, you know, misery, trying to control everything.
So how has learning this lesson changed your relationship with your husband?
Well, early on in my marriage, I didn't realize I was being so controlling, but I was. I was trying to, you know, get him to see it the way that I saw it. And I wanted our house to look great. I wanted us to look great. I wanted us to be perceived in a certain way in our community. Like, I wanted him to dress right and all those sorts of things. But, oh, my goodness, I was creating so much tension in our home and our relationship. I'll just give you one little example. There was this lamp that I wanted it positioned in the middle of the table next to the chair. And he kept pulling the lamp closer to the chair because he wanted the light to fall on his reading material.
No.
I thought that was, you know, just so ridiculous, such a subservient goal there. And so, oh, every day I would come in and just get so angry, frustrated, pulling that lamp back to the middle of the table, and I would straighten things up. And it was like this tug of war we had for a silly lamp. And I look back at that and I think, oh my goodness, does it really matter? It didn't matter. So many of the things that I'm trying to control, they just don't matter. But, you know, parenting, we were new parents and I had ideals for how our kids were supposed to behave and how they were supposed to look. And, oh my goodness, so many things I was trying to control and so much tension and anger and frustration. And, you know, I'm not arrived yet. I'm still a recovering control girl, but I certainly know that when there's tension and when I'm frustrated and when I'm angry, sometimes I just ask myself the question, okay, wait, what are you trying to control here? What is it that you're trying to take control of, or what do you feel like you're losing control of? And so that's my warning to take a step back and say, you know what, is this really important? And remind myself, God's got control for my family. I don't have to be the one managing all of the little details, making it all turn out right. I can surrender to him and put my hope and my trust back in God.
It's almost empowering, isn't it, to be able to say, hey, I'm not going to control this situation. God does have this, and it's almost a relief, isn't it?
It is. It is such a relief. Yeah, just to know, like just a couple of weeks ago, we were on a trip, and I was frustrated because my husband wasn't dressing the way I thought he should dress. We were going to visit our daughter on her college campus, and I thought, oh, I want him him to look nice to meet her friends and things. And so, you know, again, there was tension. And I just thought, you know what, this is ridiculous. I got to let go of this. This is so dumb. And he wore his sweatshirt onto, you know, the campus. And you know what, it was totally fine. And my daughter couldn't care less what her daddy was wearing. She just loves her dad and wanted to spend some time with him. And God's got all of those things, all those little details, the little things that I worry about, but even more importantly, the big things I worry about, because as our lives unfold, the issues only get bigger. The kids get bigger and the issues get bigger. And as I surrender those things to God, He's got it. And I can just rest knowing that He's in control and I don't have to be.
Are there ever instances when, well, everyone has times in their lives, really, when God seems a little distant, even though we know that He's not, or maybe He just seems like He's being a little bit quiet. So how can we relinquish control in those instances when we're not even sure that we're going to hear from Him?
Those, I think, are the hardest times, Joe, to feel, when we feel that God is distant, when we feel that He's quiet. And in fact, I think that if we're convinced God doesn't see, you know, He's so distant that He doesn't see, or we're convinced that He's just quiet because He doesn't care about us, that He's not involved, that He's just far, far away and He doesn't even see us, I'm convinced that we'll take control. We won't give up control. And so I think we have to work really hard in those times when God feels far away, when it feels like, you know, God, do you see me? Do you hear me? That's when I think we have to really lean in to His word and take His word by faith. You know, maybe we don't see how He's working in our lives, but we can believe that what He says is true. And if we will take what is true in the Bible, that God does see us, even though we don't feel it sometimes, He does see us and that He does care and that He is intricately involved in the minute details of our lives, that's the position that we have to be in before we'll surrender control to Him. We have to be convinced that He cares about us, that He loves us, and that He involves Himself in our lives.
So which of the women of the Bible that you studied has most helped you in those times when God seems like He's a little bit quiet?
I love the story of Hagar, because there's this scene in Hagar's life when she's out in the wilderness and her son is about to die. And she's, you know, Abraham has sent her away, like, into exile. It's almost a death sentence. He just sends a little bit of food and water, and that has run out. And we see Hagar put her son Ishmael under a bush. And the Bible's real specific. It says she backs away. She's like a bow shot away from him. So she can still see him, but she's not close to him. And sometimes, you know, in parenting especially, we feel distant from our kids. Like, distance has crept in, and we would love to take them back into our lap and feel like, you know, we can mommy them again. But we can't. That time has passed, and we wonder, like, God, do you see my child suffering there? I'm not even close to them. Do you see them? Do you hear them? What are you going to do for them? And I love that part of the story because it says that God heard the cries of Ishmael. It doesn't say that God heard Hagar's cries. It says He heard Ishmael's cry. So here's this boy who's dying of dehydration. And when I can't imagine that his cries were very loud. He was parched. I'm sure his cries were like a whisper. And yet God was close enough to hear him. He was close enough there. And then it says that God opened Hagar's eyes. He gave her a solution that she hadn't seen before. There was a well that she had not seen. And that's what God does. You know, in those times that He seems so distant and that we wonder if He cares, sometimes He's just waiting until we put our faith completely in Him and wait on Him to open our eyes to some solution that we haven't seen before. I love that story.
I love that story, too, and it is that waiting that is so difficult, especially when we're so desperate for an answer. We're usually at that point where we can hardly even speak anymore. And yet that might be the point that he's bringing us to. Is that correct?
Yes, I think God invites us to have faith, to have faith in a God who loves us and sees us and cares about us. And he puts us in situations that require faith, doesn't he? I mean, even our whole lifetime here on this world, in this life, we don't get to see God, you know, and we don't get to see what he's doing behind the scenes. And that's the beauty, I think, of studying these seven women of the Bible. You know, I could have written a book about seven women of today and their control issues, but by studying these women from the Bible, we get to see that even though they couldn't see God and they couldn't see what he was doing, we get to see that God really was in control. You know, like we mentioned Sarah, you know, for years and years, she could not see how God was possibly going to work this out, and yet God did have a plan, and nothing was out of his control. Nothing had slipped from his grasp, and oh my goodness, that just gives us so much hope and comfort, doesn't it, to look into their stories and learn lessons for our own stories.
Well, and I remember reading something Henry Blackaby had written, and he said that sometimes if we don't push through that waiting to get to that point where God is going to do the miracle, that we're kind of not only ripping him off, but ripping us off, because we don't get to see that miracle performed. Like, what if the men who had dropped their friend through the roof to get to Jesus and see him healed, what if they had stopped and said, oh, we can't get up, let's go away and we'll find him another day? Or what if the disciples, instead of taking that extra bread and fish to feed people, would have said, well, we'll never have enough. And so they stopped, and that would stop short of seeing this miracle occur. But goodness, when you're in that spot, it's so hard to push through to that next day, even though you know that he is listening to you somehow in some way.
Yes, I agree. And some of the most disheartening parts of these stories in the Old Testament that I looked at were when the women didn't wait on God, when they did rush ahead and they did take matters into their own hands. You know, Rebecca is a great example of that, when she fooled her husband, dressed up her son, and stole the blessing. And we just think, oh, Rebecca, you know, what a horrible way to treat your husband, so controlling, so disrespectful. And I wonder what would have happened if she had just waited on God and trusted in him. We don't get to see that ending of the story. We just see it as it's written, with what actually happened, with Rebecca being a horribly bitter picture of a controlling wife and mom.
That's true. We get to learn from their mistakes, but we don't get to see what might have happened had they followed the way that God had planned for them, do we?
No, right, exactly. And like those Jesus stories that you just mentioned, those are wonderful examples. So, like, let's hold those in front of us and remember that God is in control, that he has solutions we've never even dreamed of to provide for our needs.
So I love what you write in your book when you were talking about how we could practice surrender. You say the Bible not only instructs us to stop our sinful habits, but also says we must start doing the opposite and correct things. So to curb greediness, we practice generosity. To reverse selfishness, we practice putting others first. And to overrun a pattern of control, we should practice surrender. So how do we practice surrender? What are some good steps, some nice, maybe easier steps to get started with surrender?
Surrender, I think, can happen even in the little moments of the day. Rather than caving into myself, my own selfish desires, putting that on hold and saying, God, you be in control. Not my will, but yours be done. Not my will, but yours be done. And so I always say, start with your tongue, because James compares our tongue to a rudder. And so if we want to go in a different direction with our lives, if we want to go from control girls to Jesus girls, let's start with what we say. Because don't we, especially as women, don't we often use our tongues to get control? We try to say things and manipulate and put pressure and even just little, you know, sighs or things. We use those to get control. So if we want to live in surrender to God, and let him be in control, I say start with your tongue. So that might involve 57 times of not saying something that you would ordinarily say to try and get control of a situation, but just being quiet or just being gracious and kind and waiting on God to move in a way that you can't foresee how God's going to turn this around, but you're determined that it's not going to be your tongue that's trying to control a situation. Well, if we will do that, if we will surrender in those little moments, little by little moments with our tongue, we start changing. We become different. And I think that surrender, it does change us. Little by little, if we behave as Jesus did and say, not my will, but yours be done, suddenly we start becoming like Jesus. He transforms us. Corinthians says, by one little degree at a time, we start looking more and more like Jesus.
Well, and I'm sure everyone, I know I do, have some triggers, some situations that I tend to grasp for control more than others. And so maybe if I start practicing these things on a little bit easier situations or things where it's easier to control my tongue, then when those big things happen, I will have put into practice different techniques that are going to help me to practice surrender.
Yeah, I think we cultivate, don't we, an attitude of surrender. So if we're practicing in these little ways, it adds up to a pattern. It becomes a new way of thinking rather than I've got to take control. It's no, I've got to give God control. And it does, there's a cumulative effect of surrendering in these little by little ways that points us in a new direction. And so then when we face something that's really, really hard to surrender, you know, that's more than just a 5 seconds of not saying something, it's laying down something really important to us. Our heart is more conditioned to be ready. We've worked up those surrender muscles and we're ready to do that bigger, more costly sort of surrender.
Well, I'm talking to Shannon Popkin today. She's an author and a speaker, and she's written an intriguing new book called Control Girl, Lessons on Surrendering Your Burden of Control from 7 Women in the Bible. Shannon can be found at controlgirl.com, and you can also find her through our website. And if you're listening to our show today and you just got a little bit of it and you want to make sure that you catch the rest or maybe get a book in your hands, you can also contact us. Just go to My Faith Radio, click on Connecting Faith, and you can submit your name, your question, and your comment there. Shannon has given us a few books to give away, and we'd love to get those in your hands. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Trust you, Lord, in the eye of the storm. You remain in control. In the middle of the war, you guard my soul. You alone are the anchor. My sails are torn. Your love surrounds me. In the eye of the storm, you remain in control. In the middle of the war, you guard my soul. You alone are the anchor. When my sails are torn, your love surrounds me. In the eye of the storm.
Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, pleased to be speaking with author and speaker Shannon Popkin today on her book, Control Girl, Lessons on Surrendering Your Burden of Control from 7 Women in the Bible. Well, Shannon, I know you have some great stories in your book just about your kids and how they've taught you so much about control. Can you share one of those stories? And maybe that will help those of us who have kids and thinking we are spinning out of control.
Sure. There is a story about when I came home from the grocery store one day and saw my little 2-year-old playing in the kiddie pool. The problem with this scenario was that there was a tornado siren going off in the background. And so I was screeching in the driveway and seeing my husband there, and I'm like, "Honey, what are you doing? Come on, what's going on?" And he goes, "Oh, I was just trimming the bushes. I'm watching for the tornado." And I'm like, "No." You know, and it was those sorts of situations, I think, early on with wanting to, like you said, wanting to protect my kids, wanting to keep these horrible things from happening to them. That's it, it turned me into a controlling mama and a controlling wife. And I didn't realize how deeply rooted those tendencies to want control had become until God just started opening to my eyes to how ugly, you know. So I scooped my daughter up on that day with the tornado siren and took her to the basement, and I'm yelling at my husband through the window saying, "How could you? I don't believe you. You know, you're not protecting our daughter the way that I want you to." And he was fine. It was, you know, it was, the situation was fine. The worst part of the situation was me. I was the one out of control. And I think this desire for control, it just doesn't take me anywhere I want to go. And so this book and the process of writing it has taught me so much about myself and who I don't want to be. And little by little, surrendering to God, my hope is that God would turn me from a control girl into a Jesus girl. And my situations with my kids, oh, I want control for them. I want to control, but I don't have control. And God uses my kids continually to press me from control to surrender.
We had to come up with a little saying in our house because of situations like that, that would make me laugh occasionally and really take out those tendencies to control. And our saying is, "Daddies do things differently." You know, no one's going to die. Everyone's going to be fine. Daddies just do things differently, and that's okay. Well, you know, you bring up a good point, though. What if someone, we've been talking about how we cannot be control girls, but maybe our listeners today have someone in their family who is kind of a control girl or control boy, whatever the situation be. How could we best deal with someone who is trying to gain control and still offer respect to them?
Well, you know, the more controlling I am, the more I'm bothered by other controlling people, because we both want the same thing, right? We both want control. And so what God continues to show me is that when I'm faced with another controlling man or woman, rather than trying to get control of this controlling person, what God wants me to do, I think, is deal with my own heart. You know, look in the mirror, and what this other person needs and what I need most is we both need God. We need God to soften our own hearts and show us our own sin. And God alone is the one who can woo us with his grace and cultivate in us compassion and peace. He is the one who turns us from control girls or control boys into control or into surrendered people of God. It's not other controlling people who beat us into submission. It's God. And so I think just continually going to God with these people that bother me and surrendering them to him, I think that's what brings the most peace.
Well, Shannon, thanks so much just for writing this book and also for spending an hour with us and with our listeners. I know that you have a lot of resources on your website, controlgirl.com. Can you tell us about some of those if people want to find out more?
Yes, right now on my blog I have a Control Girl quiz. So you can take the quiz, and then there are a series of blog posts as follow-up to those quiz questions. And I'm also doing a Control Girl to Jesus Girl series where I've interviewed different women on their struggles with control and how God is using surrender to transform them. We also have a free discussion guide for leaders that's available for free download, and some other printable things and free resources for leaders and participants and group studies.
Well, and I should mention that your book does a great job of giving study questions, and you could so easily do this with a small group and some great things to practice at the end of each chapter.
Yeah, I think that if we're discussing what we're learning, oh, it just kind of gets into our hearts that much deeper, doesn't it? So I love it when women are willing to work through the book with their discussion group.
Well, Shannon, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck as you continue to enlighten all of us on what we can do to be a little less controlling and a little more surrendering.
Thanks so much. for having me, Joe. It was great to talk with you today.
You bet. Well, you've been listening to Connecting Faith, and if you heard just a bit of this conversation, you'd like to hear it in its entirety, you can just go to our website at byfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to see the podcast to this show and many others. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.